From news across the world to events in your community, hear about it all on WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
And thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Mark Lawrence here at the anchor desk. Rob Center gets the week off, so I get to do the producing, so I'm in his chair. I have no idea what all this stuff, but he says this button puts people on the radio. So we'll push that button, and with that, we will welcome Melu Tejada. Good morning, Melu. Thanks for calling in today.
Thanks for having me.
Ah, you are there. Perfect. All right. All right. You are a Penn State University Extension educator in the Family's Food and Health Unit, and we're going to talk about ticks and tick-borne illnesses. We've been talking to the Penn State Education and Extension Office every month about the important topics that have to be brought up and talked about as we go through the year. It's been a real help, so thank you so much for being available to us again. We really appreciate it. Let's talk about the trends. Why are we talking about ticks again? Because it is more prevalent or less so? Where are we headed in terms of the prevalence of ticks?
Well, the CDC typically is notified of 30,000 to 40,000 Lyme disease cases annually. And over the last decade, they've been on the rise nationally. The latest numbers we have, we know that a third of the total national cases are in Pennsylvania only. And so the last numbers we have is 2018, where there were 10,208 cases reported to the CDC. But we know that the real, or we estimate, let's say, that the real incidence is probably 10 times higher, just because not all the cases are diagnosed or they're not necessarily reported to the CDC. So there's something between 50,000, 70,000 in Pennsylvania.
And that's cases of Lyme disease.
That's cases of Lyme disease. Lyme disease is by far the most prevalent tick-borne illness in Pennsylvania and in the U.S. It's certainly not decreasing, at least not in a sort of significant trend. There are expectations that probably for 2020, because of the pandemic, there might be less cases reported, but not because there were less people outdoors getting bitten, but just because they were less likely to seek medical diagnosed or treatment because of the pandemic. But we expect that there were, that in reality people were probably even more exposed because they spend more time outdoors.
Well, and we're going to jump ahead just a tiny bit here, but Lyme disease has a series of subtle symptoms for many people that are a little bit harder to detect at times.
Yes, it's true. So the issue with Lyme disease, or like with all tick-borne disease, is that the symptoms are very aspecific. That means it's fever, headache, chills, muscle aches. They can be other little neurological signs or arthritis and things like that. But again, you know, there's so many other illnesses from other things that can cause exactly the same. So it's very difficult to do a clinical diagnosis just based on the symptoms. Obviously, with Lyme disease, you have the bullseyes like rash, like we call the erythema migrans, but it's not always present, and it's not always typical, like typical in the way that it's easy to identify and diagnose as such. So yes, it's tricky, the diagnose.
All right, we'll dig a little bit farther into specifically the real hazard of Lyme disease just a little bit later on. There is a lot of commonly held myths related to ticks and Lyme disease and the prevalence of ticks. Are there any myths that seem more commonly discussed these days?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're more discussed, but certainly there's a few common myths. So one that we get asked very often is, if the winter is very cold, will that mean that we will have less population of ticks in the following spring and summer? And so there is some truth to it, in the fact that we know that ticks will die if you go below 10 degrees Fahrenheit. They're incredibly resilient creatures. They adapt to the conditions in nature. And also you need the low temperatures to be sustained for several days. And, you know, they hide in deep soils, in leaves, in snow, and all those things can offer some insulation. So in reality, there's studies that have shown that even in freezing temperatures, only about 20% of the tick population dies off in a sort of like harsh winter. So yeah, you can't count on that. And again, even if the population is a bit smaller, let's say, you're still at higher risk. So it's not going to change any of your behaviors in terms of prevention. It's not going to change your recommendations. So yeah, I wouldn't count on that.
Okay, so we can talk about myths, but you know, and there might be a molecule of truth to some of them, but they're mm-hmm. really not going to help you prevent from getting a tick,
exactly,
a tick bite or a tick on you at all. Okay, so what do we do to prevent ticks? What's the best repellent? I know we have often talked about light-colored clothing, so you can see the ticks, this kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So first is, you know, prepare for when you're going outdoors. And again, when I say when you're going outdoors, like obviously if you're going to hike or something, you prepare differently than if you're going into your garden. But I want to always remind people, you know, that that's another myth, actually. People think like, oh, I never go hiking, I never go in the woods, or I don't hunt, so I'm not at risk. And it's not true. You know, everybody's at risk, even the kids in the playground or people doing some gardening at home. There's really no one safe. So yeah, you want to wear clothing that's adapted. So again, as you said, light colors so you can see the ticks that might be on your clothes. You want to tuck your pants into your socks to make sure you have no exposed skin. You also want to stay on the trails because again, people think sometimes there's a myth that the ticks kind of fall off trees or that they jump on you, and that's just not the case. They're usually on high grass, on leaves, and what they do is they display a behavior that's called questing, where they sort of like get prepared to just drop themselves on you. So that's why you want to stay on the trails, because if you brush less against the tall grass, then you have less chances of encountering a tick. And sometimes when people find them, you know, on the upper part of the body, they think, oh, it fell on me. But no, it's usually got to you on like near the lower body, and then it crawled up. It doesn't necessarily bite straight away, so it will crawl up. What else?
Repellent.
Yes, certainly repellents, exactly. So there's several that are recommended. The gold standard, which offers the best protection and is extremely safe, it's been used and studied for decades, is the DEET, DEET. And so that, there's several concentrations. We usually recommend something between 10 or 30%. There's no benefits of going above 50% of concentration.
Of DEET, right? Of the DEET.
Of DEET.
Right.
Yes,
okay.
Of DEET. You're going to see, so when you use any repellent, the most important thing is to use it according to the label. Okay. If you don't use it correctly, it's like sunscreen, it's not going to work. So that's really important. And DEET works really well, but sometimes it has a strong scent that people dislike. So there's other EPA-approved repellents like picaridin or oil of lemon eucalyptus, 200 Canaan. Those active ingredients will be listed on the bottle. And again, there's all kinds of different, there's sprays, there's creams, other things. The other thing that you can do is treat your, not your skin this time, but your clothes, which we use permethrin. So again, you know, people can either spray their own clothes or buy pre-treated clothes, or sometimes even send their clothes to a company that will treat them professionally for you. What you have to remember is that you do never use permethrin on your clothes, on your skin, sorry. So you have to be careful with that. But that's another option. And then very importantly, when you come home from outdoors, you have to check all your clothes first. You know, you can shake off any ticks that might not be attached, that might not have bitten you yet. you want to check your gear, like your backpack, also your pets, for example, because they can bring ticks into the house. And you want to shower within 2 hours of going back to the house, because it's been shown to reduce your risk of tick-borne disease. And then that's also the perfect time to do a tick check, because you can look everywhere. And so you have to look at things like around the hairline, behind the ears, all those little places where the ticks can hide. And to that effect, we also have a shower hanger that we produce at Extension that's available on our website. So you can have that in your shower, and it shows you exactly what to look for. You know, what are you looking for on the skin, and where to look in particular.
All right. We hear talk of a vaccine very briefly. What's the status of the idea of a available vaccine?
So there used to be a vaccine that was FDA approved, but it was voluntarily withdrawn from the market because there was a lot of controversy over some issues with potential side effects that were not actually confirmed. But that was enough so that the company was got scared and removed it. And now there's several candidates. I think there's at least two or three candidates right now that are in clinical trials. But again, it's not going to be next year or the year after. But hopefully, from what I've read, in the next 5 years, we may expect to have a suitable candidate. Again, even if you have the vaccine, you know, it's never guaranteed that people will use it. But I know for, as an Extension educator, we get asked about the vaccine all the time.
Well, May Lou, thank you so much for all the information. We'll give out the website for Penn State Extension so folks can get more information there. There's a super helpful primer there. I just read through it this morning. Just really fantastic, great information that will actually help you fight ticks, because it lists a lot of details about the life cycle and what to look out for and so on. So, May Lou, thank you so much for your information. Thanks for all you're doing. We've seen you on the webinars and seminars, so I know you're out there, and we appreciate you spreading the word here on WKOK.
Thank you for having me.
I do appreciate that. That is May Lou Tejada. She is a Penn State University Extension educator. Website is www.extension.psu.edu/ticks and ticks-borne illness. You can just search Penn State Extension ticks and or tick-borne illnesses, and you'll find that website.